Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, if you've been listening to American Variety for any length of time, you know that we often seek out surprising, out-of-the-way tales about people of the past and present. And an unusual story I had not heard before is the tale of a young woman in the mid-1800s who, to escape an abusive father and a really badly arranged marriage, dressed as a man and was able to pass as one so convincingly that she became a successful salesman. And then, when the Civil War started, she became a nurse, and then finally a spy, a very successful and effective spy for the Union against the Confederacy. And along the way, she became a master of many disguises. In a way, she was a pioneer of equal opportunity for women, what today we refer to as gender equality, although she had to go to extreme lengths in many cases to achieve that. My guests on the show today are two women who've written a novel based closely on the actual life of Sarah Emma Edmonds. The book is titled Soldier, Spy, Heroine. Authors Deborah Ann Pawlak and Cheryl Dubois are joining us today from Michigan and California, respectively. Welcome to both of you.
Hi, Court. How are you? Thank you for bringing us on the show.
I'm glad to have you on. So before we start, I want to say that Cheryl was on my show a couple of years back when she had written her first book called West of the Equator about her experiences as a charter sailboat captain down in the Caribbean. And she was only the second woman on the East Coast ever to earn a Coast Guard captain's license. So she's kind of a groundbreaker for gender equality herself. Deborah, why don't you just start by giving us a brief overview of the story of Emma Edmonds?
Well, Sarah Emma Edmonds was originally from Canada. She was born on a farm in the province of New Brunswick. And unfortunately, she was in an abusive family. Her father was very hard on her. He wanted boys to run the farm. He got girls, and the one son they did have was sickly, and he wasn't able to help his father on the farm. So he forced the girls to kind of dress as boys, and he was particularly hard on Emma because she was the last child, and he felt that was his last chance at having a son. So she tried so hard to please her father. She became a crack shot. She was an expert rider. And nothing she did was ever good enough to please him. So he decided to marry her off to an old neighbor, older than he was. She was only 16 years old, so she ran away. And eventually, to get away from her father, she disguised herself as a man and became a traveling salesman, found her way to Flint, Michigan, and ingratiated herself with a troop of Minutemen in Flint, the Flint Union Grays. And eventually they joined the Union Army during the Civil War, and she also joined with them as a man.
So she was inspired, as I recall in your book, by a story that she had read as a girl. And, you know, again, she was a girl when she ran away, but before that time even, she was an intelligent woman, and she'd become an avid reader, and she read a story that inspired her and gave her the idea of disguising herself and passing as a man. What was that about?
Right. That was the story of Fanny Campbell. It was a very popular novel back in the 1830s and 40s. And it was about a young girl who grew up during the Revolutionary War period in Massachusetts, just outside of Boston, the city of Lynn. And she ended up dressing as a man, taking a ship out to sea to save her fiancé. She became a pirate and fought in the war as well, the Revolutionary War. So that was Emma Edmonds' inspiration.
Yeah, so what did she do? You know, I'm sure our listeners are curious, you know, how did a young woman who didn't look like a man, really, how did she disguise herself as a man well enough in those times to get away with it?
She bought men's clothes. She wore men's suits. She took on a demeanor of a man. And truthfully, I think she was always more comfortable in men's clothing than women's clothing anyway. She needed to be free to support herself. And unfortunately, back in the 1850s and 60s, that was the only way a woman could do it.
Yeah, I'm guessing that growing up on the farm, and as you said in the beginning, trying to do her darndest to please her father and kind of be a substitute son may have given her a little practice for this role, right?
Absolutely.
So Cheryl, I think she was a Bible salesman, right? And when she met the guy who was a local military commander and entered his brigade in the war, how did she get into the Civil War, and what did she do in the beginning part of it? What battles did she participate in?
She met them through the church originally as a Bible salesman, and she was very successful at it because she had such a pleasant demeanor that everybody trusted her, invited her into their homes, as did this captain from the Union Grays. her masculine name was Franklin Thompson.
Mm.
So they would challenge Franklin to shooting matches and writing events, and she would beat them every time. And so when the war started and everyone was signing up in the Union Gray Troop, she wanted to join, but she was too short. Or he, Franklin Thompson, was too short. And the first time he went to be inducted, they rejected him. And he was so disappointed. And then a couple of months after the men had gone off to train, the captain came back and said, "We need you. I'm going to train you as a battlefield nurse." And so then he was accepted as a soldier. And they went to Washington, and he was trained as a battlefield nurse. They called them nurses at the time, not medics, even though she was a man at the time.
Yeah, right.
And they worked for a while before the first Battle of Bull Run in the makeshift hospitals in Washington, D.C. And then they went off to the Battle of Bull Run. And, of course, the Union Army was convinced they would win that very day, that that would be the end of the war.
Right.
One battle, and it would be finished. But that wasn't the case. They were pretty much slaughtered. And they ran back to Washington, and then they regrouped, and McClellan, you know. He was known for training them and overtraining them instead of going into battle. So there were many times when he should have gone to battle and he didn't. And eventually they went to Yorktown and Williamsburg, and Fair Oaks was one of the big battles they fought in. Actually, it was the beginning of the 7 Days battle, which I grew up in the middle of that neighborhood, right in on a property that had a Civil War hospital on the property.
Hmm.
The cemetery was the property. So as a child, I was very surrounded by that energy, and I always went metal detecting as a child.
Oh, did you?
Civil War relic. Emma served in a hospital literally a mile from there. The biggest battle of the 7 Days battle was Malvern Hill, where many, many, many thousands of both Confederate and Union soldiers died. Then after that, she had oddly reconnected in her troop with the man she truly loved from Canada, and he was killed in battle. And that is what swayed her to think she really needed to do more. It became a personal battle at that point because she lost him, and it was her true love. She had found out that a spy had recently been assassinated in Richmond, and she went to the chaplain who had become a friend of hers and said, "I want to do more, and I want to become a spy." He was torn about putting her in harm's way, but decided that, and Debbie and I believe that him and his wife knew that Franklin was really a woman. There's no proof in it because she never admits to it in her memoir, but we feel that they knew. And he did take her to Washington to a number of the generals and Pinkerton, and they did all sorts of tests. Luckily, their physicals didn't require undressing at the time. They checked their head for lumps to see if they thought that they had
right.
the ability to be
phrenology,
secretive.
They called it, I think.
Phrenology. Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Were there no physicals in all this time? No one, you know, there was never going to go in the showers and take a shower, guys, you know, wouldn't like that.
No. So, you know, her personal hygiene was also an issue, and we did address that in the book because it was difficult for her to hide certain things, but she managed to pull it off for almost 2 years while she was in you know, during the war.
Probably no one would never enter anyone's mind that this could be a man. I mean, this could be a woman masquerading as a man, so it was probably the farthest thing from their mind. Today, with women in the military, you know, it would be easy to see if somebody was passing as the opposite gender, I would think, but maybe not, maybe easier anyway. But do you think that, I know in the book that you did acknowledge in the book that the pastor and his wife knew who she was, but do you think from your research that other people along the way in her career in the military did figure it out? There was one guy who overheard her talking to the pastor's wife in your book, and I don't know if that was fictionalized. I mean, you know, this is historical fiction that you wrote, but based closely on a true story. Was that guy a real person who then threatened her afterwards?
I would say 95% of the book is factual. We added that because we knew there had to be someone that suspected her somewhere along the way, but of course we have no proof of that because her memoir never addresses the fact she's a woman. So we do suspect that several of the generals did know she was a woman, and that she rode as an aide. They loved her so much, she was asked to be an aide to several generals. And we think Poe, who was the last general she rode with, was the one that absolutely knew she was a woman. And later, the wife became very jealous when she came out as a woman to the troop and told everyone. So, because she had spent so much time with the woman's husband.
Do you think in reality she had an affair with General Poe?
It's hard to say, and I couldn't tell you for sure. But we do think that he took Franklin under his wing to protect him, because we think he believed she was a woman.
Yeah, that part kind of reminded me of General Eisenhower and his female driver during the war. I forget her name now, but
right.
You know, similar kind of story where the wife wasn't too happy about it afterwards.
They never are they?
Oh, yeah, right. They're usually the last to know, right? So at one point she became a counterintelligence agent, if one of you wants to describe that. Cheryl, you've been talking about the progression to spy so far. Maybe we can talk a little bit about some of her actual spying activities, and then the counterintelligence thing in Maryland, where she was finding Confederate spies that were embedded with the Union. You know, that was even a more complicated amount of espionage going on there.
Well, she had one night that was sort of her enlightenment or awakening, when some slaves ended up, or what they called contraband, because, of course, it was illegal to have slaves. So the slaves that had escaped from the South came into the Union camp begging for food and shelter. And, of course, the captain at the time didn't want them to stay, but she wanted them to stay for the night so she could feed them and talk to them. And she stayed up all night having a conversation with the main guy that was sort of their leader. And she discovered that Confederate soldiers just sort of ignored them. They thought they were ignorant and didn't understand what they were talking about. So those slaves that worked for the Confederate soldiers would overhear everything they were doing. So she got this idea, since she had passed as a man for so long, to dress as a black man. So she got silver nitrate and darkened her skin. So she would have, at the time, been a mixed breed, like a mulatto or what the South would have called at the time maybe high yeller, which is a terrible term, but that's the way they put it. But skin would have been sort of in between, like a brown skin, not black.
Mm-hmm.
She put on a woolly wig and the right clothes, and she snuck behind enemy lines, basically started working with a bunch of the slaves that she came across on the roadside. And they were doing hard labor, which was really too much for her because, you know, she just couldn't lift as much as they could. Mm. So she decided to pay off the water boy to give her the water bucket. She went around to the captains and the soldiers and the different officers and gave them water, and then would overhear all the things they were saying. And then she met another slave who was an older man who was cleaning rifles, and she sat down and started working with him. She didn't realize that as she dipped her hands in the water bucket, it was washing the stain off her hand.
Mm.
And he looked at her and he goes, "I think you're turning white." Of course, Franklin made a joke about it. "Yeah, my mammy was white and I always thought I turned white," or something like that. Finally, the old man admitted to Franklin that he was a spy, and he said, "I think you are too." That was when he realized he could get away with these disguises. So he later then disguised himself as a female slave, because then he could cook for the officers. And that's when he got valuable documents so that he could take those back to the Union generals and let them see what the plan was to attack Washington and other battles. And I'm going to let Debbie tell you about the Irish peddler woman disguise that she adopted.
Okay. She decided to disguise herself as an Irish peddler woman, Bridget O'Shea, she called herself, and she had to travel to the Confederate Army, but in the process, she had come down with malaria. She had gotten it from the swamp, from which was common back then, with a lot of soldiers had malaria. She had an attack on her way to the Confederate camp, and she went to a house, which she thought was empty, and she found a Confederate soldier who was dying there. And of course, the nurse in her took over, didn't seem to matter to her that he was technically the enemy, and she took care of him. he passed away, and he asked her before he died to take his watch to the Confederate general at the camp where she was heading anyway. So she went over to the camp and met with the general, and he really didn't want to be bothered with her. But when she told him about the soldier, Alan Hall, I believe his name was, he said, well, you know, that was his friend, and it really affected him. And he was grateful to her that she cared for him in his last moments. He left to make arrangements to go get the body, and she rifled through his desk and found a whole bunch of stuff. And she said it was the only time she felt guilty for spying. He gave her a horse, and she took them back to where the body was. And then when she had the chance, she made a break and went back to the Confederate camp, or to the Union camp, and reported all the things she found, which was very helpful to the Union side.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with two ladies who are the author of a book. One is Deborah Ann Pollack, and then Cheryl Dubois, who've written a book, Soldier, Spy, Heroine, a novel based on a true story of the Civil War about a woman named Sarah Emma Edmonds, who basically disguised herself as a man and went through the war acting as a very brave spy for the Union against the Confederacy. So, you know, in our culture today, we have a lot of open discussion about crossing gender lines. In the trans categories, there are transsexuals who have undergone a sex change operation, and then transgendered people identify as the other sex than their biological one. And transvestites dress as the opposite sex. I don't know if I'm leaving out any transes here, but Debbie Emma Edmonds as Franklin Thompson was certainly, I guess, a transvestite, right, technically speaking. But was she transgender in any way in our modern terms?
No, not at all. She was very much a lady. And she did this because, number one, she was trying to get away from her father. Number two, she needed a way to support herself. And being a man was really her only alternative, as she saw it. But as far as being transgender, no, she was not. After the war, she resumed her female identity of Sarah Emma Edmonds. She married. She had three children, all of which died. And her husband adopted two boys. They raised their family together. She was very happily married. So it was strictly a matter of a disguise to her.
So I know you mentioned that there was one young soldier who she met. It was interesting. She came from Canada, too, so she was also passing
yes.
as an American, so to speak. But she met this soldier that she'd known back in New Brunswick, I guess it was, and then he was killed. But posing as a man, was she forced to date to keep up that pose, to act interested in the opposite sex? And I'm asking a rhetorical question because I know the answer, having read your book. But, Deborah, go ahead and tell us about that.
Well, when she was posing as Franklin Thompson, the Bible salesman, it was important that she keep up the facade. And so in order to do that, yes, she did date women. But you have to remember, back in that day, a date was really like a buggy ride, possibly a holding of a hand at the most. I mean, there were definitely etiquette rules back then that you didn't go past. So to her, it was just kind of a fun thing. I think she did do it just to help maintain her identity as a man, but it was nothing ever serious.
I think one woman actually fell in love with her. That must have been a little awkward to deal with.
Yes, yes, yes. That would have been in Flint, Michigan, I believe. Yes, he did have one woman that really wanted to marry him, and he just was able to extricate himself from that situation. But I think once he signed up to do the war, he was such a dedicated soldier that, you know, there was no time for romance in that world.
Cheryl, Debbie introduced the idea of Sarah or Emma Edmonds was doing after the war and got married and so on. But tell us a little more about her life after the war and what she had to do. You know, kind of the transition out of being a soldier into being a civilian was pretty fraught with difficulty and drama too, huh?
Yeah, well, she actually, right after she had to go AWOL because she had malaria so badly she was going to die and she couldn't check herself into a medical hospital, I mean a military hospital, she went to Oberlin, Ohio and barely survived that bout of malaria. And then she realized, well, she tried to go back to join her troop, but she found herself on a roster, on a roll, saying she had gone AWOL. So now they would have hung her if they found her. So she immediately had to change her identity back to a woman. And then she took time off to write the memoir, of all of which she donated to soldiers. Everything she ever made in her life, pretty much, she gave away to charity. She was a very, very generous woman to the point of not having enough for herself oftentimes. She ended up going back to the East Coast to serve in a military hospital as a woman, as a nurse. And that's where she met her later husband, the man she married and stayed with the rest of her life. She basically then, you know, suffered the rest of her life with malaria and bouts of sickness and gradually, and died at a very young age. She died at 56 because of it, because it's, her organs started failing. But after they moved, I think they, were they in Texas at the time when she ran into one of the men that she served with who convinced her? First, she decided that she wanted to clear her name, so she went back to Michigan to meet her troop mates and to confess to them that she was a woman, and they were shocked. They just couldn't believe it. So they all got together, like a big secret surprise. One of them arranged for all the troop members to come to a Sunday afternoon event, and she was there, and she announced that she was Franklin Thompson, and, of course, nobody believed her. But then the chaplain stepped forward with his wife and said, yes, we'll vouch for her, because we knew that she was a woman. And then she requested that all of her troop mates write to the congressman and then later the president to confirm that she was Franklin Thompson so that she could clear her name. And the reason why she had to go AWOL and she had no choice. And then later they had to do another writing campaign. They got her honorable discharge, and they later had to do another writing campaign to get her pension, which was all of $12 a month, which is crazy. But she eventually got that and got her name cleared. And then this other man, Isaac, who she had served, not served with, he was on a different troop, but she had fixed one of his wounds. She had sewn him up at the Battle of Bull Run, I believe it was. And he submitted her to the Grand Army of the Republic, or GAR, for membership, but no woman had ever been inducted into the GAR, and they accepted her. And that's where the voting comes from for the black ball and the white balls. They had a cannon, and they had little black balls and white balls, and if they accepted her, they put white balls in the cannon. And if they did not want her, they put a black ball in. She had no black ball, so she became a member of the Grand Army of the Republic. And she's the only woman to this very day ever to be accepted into that.
Is that right? Well, Debbie, in her time after she came out as a woman, you know, so dramatically there at that party and then later on a national level, right? Was she seen as a hero or as a scandalous freak that people laughed about or you know, somewhere in between? Or what was her general image in the public mind after that? Because we'll talk about her autobiography in a minute, but it was pretty much a big-selling book at the time.
Well, I think at first she was just kind of considered an eccentric lady, you know, a neighbor, a crazy neighbor, because she did wear men's boots and she liked to wear pants. She liked to work outside. She wasn't much for housework or anything like that. And the people kind of kept a distance from her. And then when word got out that she had been this war hero, super war hero, you know, people kind of changed their viewpoint of her, but she never liked the spotlight. She was one to keep to herself, take care of her family, and they really accepted her and embraced her, I believe, in Texas, where she was living at the time. And she just tried to keep everything low-key. And one thing she very rarely discussed, if ever, was her spying. That was something she just did not talk about. She said sometimes she would say she was ashamed of what she did, but people did things during wartime that they wouldn't normally do. So she never really talked a lot about her spying other than in her book. And she, you know, obviously talked about her time as a soldier and a nurse and a mail carrier, but the spying thing she kind of kept to herself.
Well, I think even today, people who are involved in espionage, whether in one of the military services or the CIA, also spend the rest of their lives pretty much not talking about it. So it's kind of a code of the profession, and maybe even back then. But we did mention that in 1865, she wrote an autobiography called Nurse and Spy in the Union Army. And as I said, it was a big success at the time, but of course it isn't well known now. And you two are trying to remedy that and bring greater attention to her story. So in addition to the book that you've written, I gather you're hoping to get a TV movie made. Just kind of tell us briefly about that and what the prospects are.
Yes. Well, we'd love to do either a TV movie or a feature film. We wrote the screenplay first, actually. And we wrote it as a feature movie, but it could easily be done as a television, either miniseries or a movie of the week sort of thing. The only problem is it's a very high budget because, of course, it's set during the Civil War.
Yeah.
We do have a new agent who is outselling it for television, but we have... The script has been acknowledged. It's actually called Secret Hero, not Soldier Spy Heroine, because it went out prior to the book being retitled and published. And it's been, we had won a screenplay competition that we were honored for in Sundance. It was the first runner-up in the historical category for the Filmatic Screenplay Awards. And now we're going to be in the Beverly Hills Film Festival. And so the script's getting a lot of interest and action, and we're very excited about that. And it would make an amazing movie, and then more people, of course, would be aware of her story. And I think it's very timely because of the women's movement now to really press forward for women's rights, and she's one of the ultimate women heroes of our time. And in fact, what we don't realize is that during the Civil War, there were 400 to 500 women that did this on both sides, Confederate and Union, that dressed as men and went to war, often because they didn't want to be separated from their husbands.
Well, this woman, Sarah Emma Edmonds, clearly was very brave and resourceful and way ahead of her time, and obviously refused to be stuck in the box of being a dutiful young woman limited to the role then of wife and mother. Again, the book is Soldier, Spy, Heroine, a novel based on a true story of the Civil War by Cheryl Dubois and Deborah Ann Pawlak, P-A-W-L-A-K. It was published in January 2017, and you can buy it at Amazon or at Barnes & Noble. Gosh, good luck with both the book, but also with the movie, whether on TV or in a feature film. What did you say, again, the name of the film is at this point, Cheryl?
Well, at this point, it's Secret Hero. Of course, you know, they could change the name after bought by a network.
All right. Well, look for it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and thanks to both of you for being on with us on American Variety Radio.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you, Court.
Yeah, it's been fun. An interesting story. So people can look her up on Wikipedia, too. Again, Sarah Emma Edmonds, and there's quite a long story of her life, so I think she should be better known than she is, and you two are trying to get that to happen. Thanks to all of you for listening out there. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place for more American Variety Radio.